Sorry, this is really hard, honestly. Sometimes it's so easy to tell this story and sometimes it's not. 4 years ago, just over 4 years ago now, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Which, you know, is a shock. Obviously it's a shock. It'd be a shock for pretty much everybody. But sitting on that sofa, one of the breast care nurses actually asked me a question that was really pertinent to me, which was, am I worried about money? And I was really fortunate to be able to say, I talk about being lucky a lot when it comes to my story. And I, at that point, I thought I am lucky because I'm not worried about money because I've got these insurances in place. What's a real shame is that so many consumers just don't understand what's on offer. They don't really understand the risks to themselves. They think that it's not going to happen to me. We all like to think we're superheroes, but sadly we're not. People don't want to buy it. I had family and friends that I was trying for years to get them to buy it. Because I wanted them to be protected, and it was just one of those things that they just never got around to doing. Well, I got cancer and they started buying the insurance.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the One Chat podcast. Today, I'm chatting to our guest about her life experiences, the important moments and conversations that have shaped her health and well-being and made her who she is today, and we're talking about how she overcame life's challenges. Our aim is to encourage you to manage your health and well-being every day. Our hope is our guest stories inspire you to take action to improve your life, however big or small that step is. It's easy to forget just how big an impact a chat can have on our lives. Chatting is really important to who we are as humans. It's an emotional interaction with other people. A lot can be achieved through chatting, and I'm sure we've all had those moments where, in one chat, our world's changed. My name is Julie Hughes-Edwards, and our guest today on the One Chat podcast is Emma Thompson. Emma, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
Now, we're going to talk a little bit about your life experiences. We're going to talk about some of the challenges that you've seen other people go through, because that's really shaped who you are and what you do today and how you've tried to help them. But at the heart of this is your story and some of the fundamental moments and chats that have really changed your life. Now, we will come on to that, but let's introduce everybody to you. You and I have known each other in the industry for a little while, so yes. I know who you are, and I find your laughter infectious at times. I love it. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
So Emma, I live in Lincoln. I spent many years in the southeast of the country as well, but I'm up in Lincoln, lovely Lincoln now. I have a Cocker Spaniel called Molly. She's nearly 6. She makes me laugh every day. I love to travel. I have a camper van.
Excellent.
Which is great to have for day trips to the beach, but also longer adventures. So yeah, been to Austria and Switzerland and all the way up to Orkney in it. And I'm very lucky to have wonderful family and friends that I like spending a lot of time with.
And funnily enough, one of the things that I note of you as well is you're Scottish, you're not English, so you're not the actress Emma Thompson, you're the Scottish Emma Thompson.
Scottish Emma Thompson, yes. So my dad, well, I'm part Scottish through my dad. So yes, so I love it when I speak to Scottish companies because they always manage to spell my name right. But yes. Oh, and I love to cook as well. Love to cook, love to host. I'm a feeder and I have over 200 cookbooks.
200? Wow.
Yeah, I've got a bit of an
big
obsession.
Shelves.
Big shelves, absolutely, yes. No, I like to read them, like to watch cookery programs. So yes, that's something that I really enjoy doing.
Fantastic. Now, I've learned a few things about you in my research before we caught up today. You're a leap year baby.
I am. Yes.
So technically, you are going to go through second teenage years.
Yes, I am. It's quite good, actually, because every 4 years I get a special birthday, whereas most people just get their 18th and their 21st and their 40th and their 50s, etc. But yeah, every 4 years for me.
Do you think teenage years will be better the second time around?
I don't know. I'll be a lot older then, unfortunately, so maybe not. Well, I'd better behave.
We could do an entire podcast on that on its own, because I think that would be quite an amusing focus on the life. You know, people who have leap years, that's amazing, really. It's a different perspective when it comes to birthdays. So,
absolutely.
But let's talk about the beginning of your adult life. What was the chat that led to your first job? And tell us a little bit as well, once you've explained that, about what you do to earn a living today.
So, you know, I went to university, didn't really have any idea what I wanted to do at all. It was just kind of, you know, finished school and then went to university. And I did history because I have a real love for history. But I graduated, moved back home, tried to find a job and couldn't. And I was living with my parents in Lincoln and just couldn't find anything that was actually any good. So I went to my grandparents for the weekend who lived down in Surrey and ended up staying down there, just trying to find a job down there, and then didn't really go home for many years, actually.
You just moved in?
I just moved in, absolutely. So I moved in with my grandparents, managed to find a job within a few days, but then found an actual proper job, which was my first insurance job, which was for Insurer Unum.
So to tell us about that job, what was it you did? How do you go from history to insurance?
So, well, I think this is the thing. I think there's hardly anybody that would actually think, oh, wow, I really want to get into insurance when they're at school, which in a way is a real shame because there are loads of fabulous careers in our industry. But unfortunately, you know, it's just not really well known amongst kids. So if you have got kids, I definitely recommend that you have a look at financial services because there are lots of opportunities. But no, I just went for a customer service job at Unum. I was lucky enough to be put within the underwriting team. And I'll be honest, I got to about lunchtime, they'd show me all the systems and I said, I'm sorry, what is underwriting? You know, they didn't even explain that. So, you know, people just don't have any clue what we'd really do as a market whatsoever. But it was really, really good for me. And that gave me a really good understanding about what insurance can actually do for people.
So you've gone into customer services. Does that mean you're talking to people every day or what was it you were actually doing?
Yeah, so I was talking to primarily financial advisors. I was helping their clients to secure the cover. So I was calling a lot of surgeries. I was doing a lot of chasing up, just doing everything I possibly could to get those clients the insurance that they needed. So yeah, it was very varied. I worked with lots of lovely people. It was a good start. You know, I thought, you know, customer service is kind of, that worked for me. That suited my personality, but it still wasn't really what I wanted to do. I wanted to try and use my history degree. And that's what I tried to do. That was my aim when I moved to London anyway.
So you started in customer services. You're in the insurance industry. What happens next? What was the next step?
So as I said, so I moved to London, obviously needed to carry on paying the bills, but thought, oh, you know, hopefully I'll use this degree for something a bit more exciting than insurance. I'll be honest, forgive me. So I went to work for a very small advisor firm. There was only seven of us, but I thought, again, you know, I'll just stay here a few months, and I just carried on looking for some history jobs. Do you know, in that time, I said I had no intention of staying in the industry at that point. I just didn't. But I would say probably after about 6 months, I really had a completely change in mindset in terms of actually really understanding the good work that we do. And that really motivated me to want to stay. So whilst, you know, maybe one of these days I'll end up working in a National Trust property, showing people around rooms, using my history for that. I changed and I thought, no, I'm going to stay where I am.
What was it that changed? You must have had some kind of conversation somewhere along the line that said, do you know what, actually, I'm interested in this.
So I think the thing for me was really understanding my purpose and really understanding the difference that I can make to people's lives. And that's the good thing that we do within our industry. Helping people get cover and helping them to be protected when tragedy strikes. You know, unfortunately, we don't like to think about bad stuff happening, but it does. And, you know, I was lucky enough to work for somebody that actually kind of really inspired me to actually think about the difference that you're making. So it wasn't just a job for me. And then that kind of just progressively got more and more strong as my career developed, really, and my role grew, and then I was helping more and more people.
So you talk about helping people. So what is it when you were doing as a job that was actually helping? You know, previously, you'd been in underwriting, which was helping people to get insurance in the first place. Yeah. But what is it that it did?
Yeah, so I was supporting advisors who were talking to clients and making them understand the value of the protection insurance that we sell. Helping them to understand the risks, their own, you know, exposure to getting sick and sadly passing away before retirement, you know, and that really puts them at financial strain, to be perfectly honest, if that does happen. So the advisors had that really tricky job of speaking to consumers and helping them to understand that, you know, and, well, getting them to talk about stuff they really don't want to talk about, that is really tough. But my role was to then support those advisors. So when those customers had applied for that cover, to then do everything I possibly could to get them to get it on risk, get it live, really.
Clearly, from the work you've done over the years, your career has shaped a passion for helping people.
Yes.
But it's very relevant to your story today, a little bit of what we're talking about. You're an advocate of insurance. You're an advocate of insurance that pays out if you're ill or, unfortunately, if someone's died, because that makes life a little bit better.
Yeah.
We use a wraparound phrase for it in our industry. It's not one that everybody else knows. We call it protection insurance now. Other people might think protection means something else. Let's not get into that. There's many different definitions of protection. But most people will know it as life insurance, critical illness insurance, income protection. And it's something that can really help at the point you need it in life. Now, why are you such an advocate of people planning for the future?
So probably about 4 years after I started within that company, we actually started to look after the claimants as well. So it wasn't just about supporting people and helping them arrange the cover in the first place. Because actually the point of claim is really when you know whether you've done the good job and actually that person or that family is going to be financially secure. So I started actually, you know, helping those claimants and taking those calls. And it was difficult, you know, taking a call from somebody that just lost a partner or just been diagnosed with something awful. But then when you were calling them back, you know, a week or so later, you know, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, however long it may have taken. But when you're calling them back to confirm that actually, you know, your claim has been approved and the money's going to be in your bank account tomorrow, you know, just the relief that person has, even though they're going through such a tough time, it just means that they don't have to worry about money. And that is really just what helped really sort of develop the purpose that I had. You know, that kept spurring me on, because you just think, well, you know, I want more and more people to be able to benefit from the good work that we can do to help them.
And it is a moment of truth, isn't it?
It is, absolutely, yeah.
It's somebody's bought something that's there to help in the future. And it doesn't change what somebody goes through, is the truth.
No.
You can't change a situation. You've lost a loved one or you're going through a real serious illness, but it can take the pressure out a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what's a real shame is that so many consumers just don't understand what's on offer. They don't really understand the risks to themselves. They think that it's not going to happen to me. We all like to think we're superheroes, but sadly we're not. And then also, you know, well, if it does happen to me, well, you know, my partner will cover me, or I'll move back in with my parents, or I'm sure my employer will be amazing. And whilst that absolutely can work out for a lot of people, sadly it doesn't. And that's where insurance plays a huge part in making sure that people are financially secure when something awful does happen. And as I said, sadly it does.
You talked about the fact that for your own business that you were working for, it was their moment of truth. You know, you've worked to put these things in place, this insurance in place to help them, and then the calls are coming through that say they need help. Now, what's it like speaking to the people at that moment to try and help them? Because it's a very emotional situation to be in.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'd say, you know, there are so many amazing colleagues in our industry that help claimants, and I think probably if any of them haven't actually cried at some point, then they might, they've either been incredibly lucky or maybe they're just very, very resilient. But as I said, you know, you kind of have sad tears, but then you have happy tears as well. And you just know that it just can make such a positive difference to people. See, I'm getting a bit emotional now talking about it.
So I watch you stand up on those platforms. You are a strong, confident woman. You know, you have a real passion for what we do. But key to your story is that you have hit one of those life-changing moments, haven't you?
Yes, I have. So 4 years ago, just over 4 years ago now, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, which, you know, is a shock. Obviously, it's a shock. It'd be a shock for pretty much everybody. But it was a particularly shock for me because, you know, I don't have a history of cancer in my family. Lots of diabetes and strokes and heart attacks, but not cancer. But it got to the point where I thought there was something not quite right. And I went to the GP and I got sent off to go and have some tests done. And I'm not going to lie, I went by myself. I didn't tell anybody, actually. Sorry, this is really hard, honestly.
Of course it is.
Sometimes it's so easy to tell this story and sometimes it's not. So no, I didn't tell anybody. My dad had been really unwell before. And oh God, sorry, I'm going to have to stop again. God, this is ridiculous.
It's okay. Take a breather.
So I went by myself because I didn't tell anybody. My dad had been really unwell only a few months previously, and I just didn't want to worry my parents anymore. Two of my best friends, they lost their mum to cancer as well, so I didn't want to worry them. So anyway, so I just went along to the hospital, had the test, was not expecting to get any diagnosis on that day at all. I thought I'd be called back on another occasion and be told the results. But obviously they did a number of tests on me, and when they took me into a room with sofas and cushions, I thought, well, that's it. They don't do this if it's going to be good news. So, so they told me there and then I had breast cancer. They obviously couldn't tell me exactly what the stage was or anything like that, but I was told that I had breast cancer and what the next steps would be. But sitting on that sofa, one of the breast care nurses actually asked me a question that was really pertinent to me, which was, am I worried about money? And I was really fortunate to be able to say, I say, I talk about being lucky a lot when it comes to my story. And I, at that point, I thought, I am lucky because I'm not worried about money because I've got these insurances in place. And I also knew that I had good sick pay at work as well. But it just made me think how many other people, both men and women, who have been sat on that sofa and either were not able to answer with a clear decision because they didn't know. They didn't know what savings they might have. They didn't know how they might manage to pay the bills. They didn't know how their employer was going to support them. Or there could have been some people that would have just immediately gone, yeah, I'm worried about money, because they knew that they just wouldn't have had any provision in place and they wouldn't have known what state benefits they might have been able to claim on. And let's face it, state benefits are really low anyway. So even if you can claim, it's not going to be able to cover everything. So it was quite weird in that moment of having that devastating news to then be thinking that I was actually quite lucky. So I was told that day. My top tip definitely would be, my first top tip is, you know, if you're going to go along to those things, don't go by yourself, because that was absolutely horrific, being told that news. And then I just sat in the car park and I just thought, I don't even know how I'm going to tell anybody. And in fact, I didn't even go home straight away. I didn't even go and tell my parents straight away. I went to my uncle's house because I just thought, I don't even know how to tell anybody. So that's what happened.
Thank you, because I know it's not easy to talk about this. Obviously it's such a personal thing for anybody who goes through it. We'll come back to the talking to people about it and then how you deal with actually going through cancer treatment. But let's talk a little bit about how you realised you needed something to get checked. Now, yeah. This is something I know you've been trying to educate people on a lot. So
I have.
You have got a piece of paper for us.
I do. Let me go and get it.
So you grab your paper and let's explain to everybody and let's educate a little bit on spotting the signs of breast cancer. So Emma, tell the audience what you're holding.
So this is, for me, an amazing image that is produced by the Know Your Lemons Foundation, based in the States, but it's essentially 12 lemons in an egg carton, really. It's
obviously a typical image, sure.
Typical image,
exactly,
absolutely.
What you'd expect to see in an egg box.
But I saw this on Facebook, and I just thought, do you know what? One of those lemons is me. Because when it comes to cancer, when it comes to breast cancer, you know, a lot of people are just told, you know, look out for the lumps, but it's actually not just lumps that you need to be mindful of. And I didn't have a lump, I had one of the other lemons. And it was seeing that made me go and see the GP in the first place. So seeing that image really could have saved my life, or it certainly would have helped get the treatment earlier than if I hadn't seen it. So I am kind of wanting to raise awareness as much as possible. And we need to remember as well that it's not just women that get breast cancer, it's men as well. So it's really important that everybody is aware. So keep checking yourself, share that image if you can.
It's a very interesting image. There are genuinely 12 lemons in this box, but they each show something very different. One has a thick area, one shows a dimple on the nipple, one shows a bump on it, one has a new shape or size. You know, they're all slightly different because
yes,
there are all signs that there could be something you need to go and get checked.
Absolutely. You know, and that's why, and it's just such a simple image for people to look at, you know, and when I have shared it with people, you know, they've been quite surprised. I think one, just to actually see all the different, you know, indications of cancer, breast cancer, but also just how simple that image could be and how powerful it is. And as I said, you know, seeing that helped me realise that I need to go in and see the GP. And then obviously that resulted in my well, diagnosis 2 weeks later.
It is an important lesson. I mean, the figures in the UK here is it's something in the region of around 56,000 people are diagnosed with breast cancer every year. That's potentially 1 in 7 women. And it, as you said, it's not just women, it's men.
Yes.
If you break it down again, that's potentially probably around 150 people a day. So it's really important we understand our own bodies and our well-being and are doing the right things to check for something like breast cancer.
Absolutely. You know, and obviously the earlier you get it checked out, then the best chance you have of actually having a successful recovery. So, you know, I was very fortunate. I mean, in the end, I got diagnosed with stage 2 grade 3 cancer. So it wasn't, thankfully it wasn't terminal. Thankfully it could have been a lot worse, but it obviously could have been better that the lump had grown quite considerably. But I was very fortunate that I was able to get treatment fast.
I have to say, the first time I saw you use that image to educate people about breast cancer and the Know Your Lemons Foundation, I haven't been able to look at a lemon in the same way. I mean, every now and again, I will look at one and I have that thought now about the image that you introduced us all to. If anyone's interested, by the way, who's actually listening or watching today, the Know Your Lemons Foundation does have an app. You can get information from it. The image is there. It's a fabulous image. It is genuinely, go and take a look and you can learn a lot from them, which is, it's always a good thing to be able to learn something new. It could help somebody, even if it doesn't help yourself. All joking aside, you mentioned you went along on your own.
Yeah. Big mistake, because
you didn't expect to get that news that day.
No.
It's that one chat that's changed your life there and then. You went to your uncle's because you weren't sure what to do. So did you speak to him first or did you go and then talk to your family? How when you're in that situation, do you break the news to the people you love?
Well, it's hard. And I think that's why I went to Nigel's, just because it was easier to tell him than my parents. So, yeah, so by the time I drove back from my uncle's and then go straight to my parents' house and told them. But as I said, you know, it was awful, but we didn't know quite, you know, at that point, yes, I had breast cancer, but it could have been milder than what it actually turned out to be. It could have been worse, you know, I just didn't really know. And so the next week I had a follow-up appointment with the surgeon and the oncologist. I took my mum that time. Didn't go by myself.
Good.
You know, and then, you know, they were able to tell me what I was going to be, you know, going through in terms of recovery. At that point, they thought it was a grade 2 tumour. It turned out to be a grade 3 by the time they did my operation.
What's it like to go through dealing with cancer? There's the physical impact. There's the emotional impact. As you say, you know, luckily you didn't have to worry about money at that point, but it's tough on anybody who goes through that.
It is completely, you know, and I, you know, I didn't have a partner to support me. A lot of people, when they think about protection insurance, and I appreciate that not all consumers think about it at all, but, you know, when they do, they kind of think about it's there to protect your family, you know, it's there for families. But actually, it isn't just for those that have got families, it's for single people as well, and those with and without children. So that was really important that I actually had that own sort of financial independence to some extent. But also, I mean, one of the other bits of my story is when I was told the news, my as I said, you know, my goodness, I've just been diagnosed with cancer. Great, I don't have to worry about money. But I was in the middle of adopting a dog as well. So I said at the start, I have Molly. And I was just thinking, oh my goodness, what do I do about her? And the nurse and the oncologist, they just said, well, you're gonna need her. So so a week after coming out of surgery, I got Molly. And that made a big difference in terms of recovery. You talk about sort of well-being, and for those of us that have got pets, know that how positive that can be in terms of having a pet in your life. So okay. That's a good story. So another top tip, get a pet if you don't already have one. If you have bad news, it could help with your recovery.
Helps with mental well-being.
Absolutely, yes. It does. It really does, because she does make me laugh every single day. And for those of you that have got Cocker Spaniels, you know that they are cheeky and they do definitely make you laugh every day.
Do you think going through cancer has changed you and your approach to health and well-being?
Yes, it has. You know, I think the first thing is, you know, just to be aware about any changes in your body. And, you know, and that's what I encourage, you know, family and friends as well. If they spot any changes, and it's obviously not just cancer, but if there's anything that's changing, just don't pretend it's not there. Don't think it's just going to go away. Go and get it checked out. And I appreciate, obviously, you know, the NHS is undergoing real challenges at the moment. But don't use that as a reason not to get in contact with your GP. Because it could just be something that could be resolved really, really easily, but it could be something more serious. So that I think is really important. And then I think, yeah, it is about that whole sort of attitude of just, you know, taking, yeah, just don't put things off in general, you know, you know, live life as much as you possibly can. And, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I bought the camper van.
So, I was going to say, is that why you have the camper van? You're out there living it now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I bought that at the time. I just thought, do you know what? I've just been diagnosed with cancer. Yeah, that was my
go have some fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, I won't swear. But yes, yeah, it was just kind of, you know, that was, I just thought I'm going to need that. And I did need it. And then actually, because then we then went into the pandemic, it was even more valuable to actually have, you know, so going back to that kind of, you know, mental well-being that all of us were massively struggling through during the pandemic. Yes, because I was diagnosed in 2019. So, you know, and I was fully recovered, back to work January 2020. And I thought, brilliant, this is going to be a great year. And then and then lo and behold, we have the pandemic. So, yes. But yeah, it is really important. And that talking piece as well that we talked about earlier is so valuable as well. You know, talking to family, friends, loved ones, professionals, whatever it is. You know, if there's something worrying you, don't bottle it up.
Who did you lean on for help through all of that, you know, and I guess, did it change the type of conversations you had with people?
A little bit. So I mean, I primarily leaned on my mum in particular, I suppose, was the one that was there for me. And I mean, funny enough, I as I said, you know, I obviously worked and lived in and around London for many years, and I moved back up to Lincoln 8 years ago because, as I said, two of my friends, they lost their mum to cancer. And I just thought, God, you know, what if that happened to my parents? You know, so I actually moved up to be closer to them in case they got ill. And as I said, my dad did get sick, but then I got sick. So, you know, we're kind of there to support each other. But I'm also very lucky that, you know, I've got very good friends nearby and all around the country as well. So I had an amazing network of people that were there to support me, whether that be in person or just at the end of the phone. But I think what was interesting as well is that lots of people at the time, they were kind of like, they didn't want to share anything that was going bad in their lives, because they were like, oh no, I'm fine. I'm like, are you really fine? No, you're going through cancer. I don't want to share it. And I, no, you know, just because I'm going through cancer doesn't mean to say that whatever it is that's going bad in your life isn't something that's important. I want to hear about it. And actually, that is a good thing, because it kind of takes my mind off what I'm going through. So that is probably the thing that changed the most, actually. Friends weren't wanting to share when they'd have been having a bad day or when they were having real problems, because they just thought, oh, you've got enough to deal with. But actually, yeah, I wanted to know. I didn't want them to stop doing that. So I kind of had to get them to change the way they were thinking so we could have normal conversations.
That's good. I know from speaking to other people, we could do an entire podcast on how to talk to somebody and how to help somebody who's been through cancer, because you just want to have ordinary conversations. Yeah, yep. Life is still going on.
Yep. And you know what? Just some people just literally just texting just to say, thinking about you, or just how are you? You know, that's all they need to do. And I had so many, you know, even just industry colleagues just reach out, and that was just so lovely. So, you know, it just brightens your day that you just think that somebody is actually thinking about you and is there for you if you need it. And I think some people are really quite, you know, they might have just texted because they didn't know what to say on the phone. That's fine, you know, and some people do find it really awkward and different, you know, but don't not pick up the phone. Don't not text. Don't not get in touch, because I can tell you now that that's actually worse than perhaps somebody picking up the phone and accidentally saying the wrong thing.
What do you think you've learned from the people you know and love as a result of going through your cancer experience?
Just how amazing they are. Just genuinely, just how they absolutely stepped up. So yeah, I was very lucky.
That's fabulous. I mean, I'm thrilled that you're now clear and that life is back to normal, because it will have changed you. Can you explain the insurances that you had that made a difference to your financial well-being that helped you through?
Yeah, so I was very lucky. As I said, the first thing is I was lucky that I had good sick pay through my employer. But I also had critical illness insurance, which was probably the biggest impact that I had in terms of insurance payments. So I had two policies. One that I took out in my 20s. And then I was very fortunate, because at the end of 2018, I left that job that I'd been there for 18 years and joined another one. And that meant that I would have lost my employee benefits. Now, lots of us are lucky that work offers benefits like, you know, sick pay, but also group schemes like critical illness cover or death in service or income protection. But I was going to lose the income protection, and I was going to lose the private medical insurance actually that I had through work when I changed jobs. So thankfully, I reviewed my own insurance and took that out until, and even to be perfectly honest, I knew I was going to get it eventually, because after my probation period, I would have had it. But I just thought, well, you know, it's 6 months, you know, it's 6 months without cover. Am I willing to take that risk? And thankfully, I didn't take that risk. But a lot of people would have done, because they would have just thought, well, 6 months, what can happen in 6 months? Well, I got diagnosed with cancer in that 6 month period. So if I hadn't have taken out insurance myself, I would have been in a worse financial
situation. Your own advice made all the difference.
Yes, absolutely. And again, you know, going back to that word lucky, you know, I'm lucky that I work in this industry, because actually a lot of people wouldn't have thought to do that. And that's why, you know, speaking to an advisor and having that relationship with an advisor who's going to look after you going forward, you know, throughout the term of your policy is really important for consumers. So definitely go and speak to a good advisor who's going to make sure that they're not just going to help you at the outset, but they're going to help make sure that your cover remains suitable, because changing circumstances happens. You know, people get married, they get divorced, they have children, change jobs, all of that. And so that first time you speak to an advisor, that's not just a one and done situation, because you do need to review your cover regularly, as I found out.
So critical illness insurance, it's there really for when you have that life-changing illness.
Yes.
And it's there to help pay the bills. It can provide you with a sum of money that can just make that experience easier, really. As someone who advocates having it, what did it mean for your life?
So a number of things, really. So one, I was able to pay off some of my mortgage, which then reduced that financial burden on me. I kept some of the money back, because I just didn't know what the future held for me. I didn't know whether I was going to get ill again. But also there's an added cost of being sick, which a lot of people forget about too. So just using my example, you know, I'm quite lucky that I don't, again, that word lucky, but I'm quite lucky that I don't live that far away from the hospital. I'm only 3 miles away. But had I been further, and I said I live in Lincolnshire is a very rural county. Some people live 30, 40, 50 minutes away. Mm. And I couldn't drive. I couldn't drive for ages post-surgery. So, you know, I was able to get my mum and my friends to take me to the hospital. But if I'd had to pay for taxes, that would have been added cost. And if I lived further away, it would have been really expensive. I had a dog, as I've said, I adopted Molly. I needed somebody to do walks with her. So I needed to pay a dog walker for occasions when I couldn't get family and friends to walk her for me. Because again, walking her was for a period of time not possible for me. Washing my hair, I couldn't wash my hair for ages.
Right.
So I had to go and pay three times a week to go to the hairdressers, two or three times a week to go to the hairdressers.
Which, let's face it, with whatever you're going through, would have been quite a nice experience anyway.
It was a nice experience, I'm not going to lie. You know, they were very, very kind. But at the same time, that is an added cost. And there's lots of added costs that people can have as a result. I mean, I know I don't have children, but, you know, childcare would have been a cost if I had, because, you know, I wouldn't have been able to pick them up or do the things that I would normally have done. And obviously a lot of parents would be in exactly that position. So, and childcare is obviously so expensive, as parents out there will know. So that's really where critical illness cover can make a big difference. And then you've got other people that might need to adapt their home, or, you know, change, well, they might even need to move home or change their car or whatever it is, depending on their disability or illness. And that's where critical illness cover can make a huge difference.
Okay. What would you say to people who aren't sure of its value?
It is important, you know, like all insurances, like your home insurance, like your car insurance, is necessary for a lot of people who sadly get an illness like I did. And it definitely gives that peace of mind. But for me, it's not just about the payout. It's actually the added support that it gets as well. So the critical illness policy that I had, that gave me access to a second medical opinion service. And whilst, as I said, my surgeon, I had all confidence in, I thought, well, I've got this, so I might as well use it. So my medical details were sent off, and I got a very nice call from an oncologist based in Massachusetts. And he went through all my details and he agreed with my surgeon's plan for me, which was great. But what he did say is that he recommended that I have the BRCA test done. Which is the test that Angelina Jolie had.
Yes, of course.
To indicate whether I was going to be at an increased risk of having breast cancer again. And more importantly, whether my mum or my sister were at an increased risk too. So I had that because I went to my private medical insurer, a different insurance company, and said, I've been recommended I have this. Would you pay for the test to be undertaken? And they said, yes, absolutely. So that's where two different insurance companies effectively are kind of working together to help. So it's not just the payout, it's actually some of the added value services that come alongside these policies to make them feel far more valuable. And lots of these benefits as well, you don't have to have something as serious as cancer to be able to benefit from them. And that's really where some of the value comes in.
And this is something you're really passionate about, isn't it? You know, this is something you were trying to educate people on before you had your own cancer.
Yeah. I was going to say, and I'm not going to lie, you know, we said, you know, we said earlier, you know, people don't want to buy it. I had family and friends that I was trying for years to get them to buy it because I wanted them to be protected. And it was just one of those things that they just never got around to doing. Well, I got cancer and they started buying the insurance. So that's definitely one positive that's come out of it, that at least my family and friends are better protected as a result. But that just goes to show that even loved ones of people like me who kind of know what they're talking about don't always take that advice. But it is important. It really is important.
You and I get it, but it's hard to help people understand that. So
absolutely.
That's why you created something in the foundations of your own passion for this. You created something called the Women in Protection Network.
I did, yes. I wanted to try and help more women access insurance. And I also wanted to help more women in our industry develop their careers because we work in financial services and it is still a little bit male dominated. Consumers across the board are not protected enough, but women in particular, in all walks of life, their financial resilience is not as good as their male counterparts, whether that be their earnings potential, their pension provision, home ownership, whatever it may be. But insurance it is one of them as well. Setting up a network to help those female consumers, as well as colleagues in the industry who perhaps don't have enough role models. So it was about trying to create a network so that industry colleagues could grow their careers, improve their financial resilience through better earnings potential, but also network with like-minded people, share ideas, share problems, and hopefully get a lot out of it. That was 2017. I set that up, and we're going from strength to strength.
Excellent. And the purpose of that organisation is ultimately help more women understand the importance of having protection insurance, life insurance, income protection, which pays money if you're too ill to work.
Absolutely. And lots of consumers focus on the needs of the primary earner, the breadwinner, for want of a better word, but actually there's very few households in the UK that can survive on just one income, and women are still more likely to be the primary carer. They're still more likely to be the secondary earner. They're more likely to be working in a part-time role, but you know, my network undertook research last year in conjunction with AIG, And, you know, we found that 20% of households, you know, couldn't even pay the basics if they lost that secondary earner's income. So not the fancy stuff, not going out for dinners or holidays, but literally, you know, their rent or their mortgage or their bills. So that just goes to show how important that secondary earner's income is. So therefore, you need to insure it, you know, and that's more likely to be the female. But it's so important that that person is insured so that if they're not there to be able to undertake those duties, all that income is just purely lost, that, you know, the household doesn't suffer, the family doesn't suffer, the person doesn't suffer. That's really important. So both people in a, you know, in a relationship need to be properly protected.
That research you did was really interesting. And there was a lot in there that teaches you about just how we don't stop and look at our own finances. You know, you mentioned 20% said they wouldn't be able to manage if somebody wasn't there to help. But it's all those other aspects, isn't it? It is the roles that people play within a household that you don't think about. It doesn't matter what the gender is.
No.
It's everybody is there to help. And if somebody's then suddenly too ill to help, you've got to rethink how you're going to manage that.
Absolutely. And I think there's also a bit of an assumption as well that, oh, okay, the primary earner, they can still carry on paying the bills. They earn enough to be able to cover it. But actually, you know, if they've got a really busy job, you've got two small kids, let's just say, and, you know, are they actually going to want to do it? If they've just lost their wife, then are they going to want to take some time out, focus on the family? Can they still do that 50-hour a week job, commuting, you know, travelling about perhaps as well? You know, probably not. You know, at the very least, they might want to take a few months out, or they might want to completely change what they're doing to make sure that they're there for their family.
I've actually had that conversation at home and with my own partner, where we have insurance because we're in the same industry, we get why you need it. And he turned to me one day and he said, "Why have you got more life insurance than me?" I said, "Love, this is an awkward conversation, but if you die tomorrow, we'll be utterly devastated. It will change us completely. But we'll be okay. I'll be able to carry on and do the things we need to do." I said, "If that happens to me, you're going to need to stop. You're going to need to prioritise the kids and yourself. And you're not going to be able to do the things that need doing. You're going to need extra help. So the extra life insurance I've got is to help pay for that help you're going to need so that you can all stop and think about what you're going to do next and recover and rebuild life." And he stopped and he checked and he went, "Oh, hadn't thought of that. Okay, thanks." And it is that, isn't it? We don't like to stop and think about it.
No.
But actually doing so is really important, because these things will happen to us at some point. We don't want to go through life thinking it's all terrible and it's going to be all doom and gloom. But be practical. It's going to happen.
Absolutely. You know, there are things that we have to think about that we don't like to think about, whether that be insurance, whether that be making a will, whatever it may be. You know, those are tough decisions that you just got to get around to doing.
I could probably sit and talk to you about all sorts of things for another hour, but I'm sure we could as well. But I kind of want to wrap us up and say thank you for sharing your story today. I know how tough it is to talk about cancer, going through it. We're all human. This is the point. We all go through experiences that will shape us and impact every single one of us. So thank you for sharing your wisdom, your experience. I know we bump into each other all the time in the industry, but I've learned things about you I didn't know. Thank you so much.
The confidences
you've shared with our audience, I hope it inspires them to take action and in some way improve their own lives.
Well, do you know what? If just one person thinks about it and buys insurance and then, you know, has that peace of mind, then we've done a good thing today, but hopefully it'll be more than one.
Thank you. I'm Julie Hughes-Edwards. You've been listening to the One Chat podcast with Emma Thompson. We'll look forward to seeing you again next time. Thank you.